Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade. Right now, I'm digging into the history of incredible infrastructure projects of the 1930s, including the Hoover Dam, the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, and more. The promise is in the title. History That Doesn't Suck. Available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is this month, maybe week, where if you don't start putting Democrats in prison, we're going to be right back to the summer of love by the end of the summer. Violence, riots, the stuff we know they're capable of because we've watched them do it before. $2 billion worth of damage was the final estimate from the summer of love, which really stretched in through the end of August, by the insurance industry. $2 billion. And keep in mind, that was just the payout on the damage to insured businesses. 40% of small businesses are not insured. That's the left. That's who they are right there. That number, that captures it all. I mean, you're talking about just the Wisconsin damage over 72 hours came to $52 million. They were cool. They were fine. They just sashayed right out of there. They'll do it again if Trump lets them. And this has been a showdown before, Lee, between Trump and the left to see, is he going to let them rampage through the streets? Last time he basically did. And you got the Summer of Love, which was one big campaign event, really.
Well, he faced a whole lot of opposition to any of
it. Oh, he did. And I don't blame him. You know what I mean? He didn't have the popularity or the backing that he does now. And they took advantage of that. By the way, did you see the new poll out? 55% approval for Donald Trump? That is some political capital right there.
It is. You're right.
Newsweek reporting that, right? So he's in a place he's never been. He's always been under, or for most of the last presidency, except very briefly, he was always underwater. He was always under 50%, right?
And that puts Democrats in a place where they've never been before.
I know. President Donald Trump experiencing a rebound in public opinion. New polling shows, and the really wild thing about this is the latest Insider Advantage poll taken between May 17th and 19th. 1,000 likely voters gives Trump a net approval of plus 11, 55% approving. They don't say that in this article, but I'm pretty sure that's the highest he's ever polled. In fact, I'm almost certain of it. I tried to look that up on Real Clear Politics, but I think that's the highest he's ever polled. And that's not a right-leaning pollster.
And if that's likely voters, like it says, that's what really matters.
That's a big deal.
For the folks who want to have an opinion about things, that's fine that you're right. But if you don't vote, it doesn't matter. Because you're not involved in the decision process.
No. So think about this for a minute, what this means. After they crashed the stock market down thousands of points, total hysteria, just on a loop trying to destroy his economic policy, he gets more popular? It's what I think people are giving them the benefit of the doubt because they think, well, you know what? He's taking a lot of heat, but he really is trying to fix things.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're giving him the benefit of the doubt for.
I think you're right. I mean, I think that's the attitude of most average American voters, regardless of party. If they are not, you know, like you and I, who are ultra-partisan, and I'll admit that. I certainly lean very heavily toward the right and conservatism, not necessarily GOP, but certainly to the right. But I think that most Americans, especially those in the middle, if they see a president who is taking definitive action, who's really doing things, really making changes, really making progress— they're going to give him his support.
Yeah, taking risks, too.
Yeah,
it's very obvious.
That's a good
he's
point,
very
too.
Big risks to try to get things that he believes are best for the American people.
Yeah. Even if they don't work, at least he's doing something different than what previous administrations have either done or not even tried to do.
Meanwhile, what are the Democrats doing? This is getting next level stupid. They sent Swalwell out to threaten ICE facilities. Take a listen at this. So this is, they're very angry that Representative Monica McIver was not allowed to assault ICE agents in much the way Democrats did during the Summer of Love, which was normalized. They got to do it before under Trump, so they feel they should get to do it again, even though the law says they can't, but they're Democrats. And look, this is a test of Trump. As I said, last time he let him go, for the most part, he didn't send the feds in like he could have. That would have been risky. It might have blown up in his face. I don't know. I'm not criticizing him for that. But what the Democrats know is he has never really cracked down on them. And so they're inching along to see how much violence they can get away with.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade. Right now, I'm digging into the history of incredible infrastructure projects of the 1930s, including the Hoover Dam, the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, and more. The promise is in the title, History That Doesn't Suck. Available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's Representative Eric Swalwell suggesting kind of a new layer, a new level of violence.
If you mess with one person in the family, you mess with the entire family. I promise you there's going to be more unnoticed visit my colleagues where they show up and they better be let in.
And there's a bleep out in the middle of that. I'm sorry, but unnoticed visits from my colleagues and they better be let in. Okay, what he's not telling the sheeple there who are watching this, all they have to do to be let in is just call and schedule an appointment. And they do have oversight abilities as Congress members. They can go into any of these facilities. So, but what he's saying is, no, we don't want to make an appointment. We want to just drop by and everybody drop everything. And if you don't let us in, we get violent. Because what's the fun of getting let in? Then you can't have acrimony. Right. You can't have your photo op.
This is video for their campaign because this is what they want to campaign on against Donald Trump.
He is a dictator.
Yeah.
That's it. And so they need dictator kind of be real film to put in the backgrounds. They don't have any.
Right.
And they're generating it on purpose.
Right. Exactly.
On purpose. But listen to the difference. I am stunned almost every day. I'm sure you are too. At the difference between Trump 1.0 and Trump 2.0.
Yes.
Trump 2.0 took a really big fat red pill. Okay. With them trying to put him in prison for 700 years, which was the actual total on the charges had he gone. 700, that'll do that to you. And so this time he's not putting up with their junk. And so he's asked about Monica McIver, who we've all now seen assault that ICE agent on camera. It is indisputable. She was violent. Her take is, I was mad. And literally in her statement, it says they arrested the mayor, the Democrat mayor she was with, and that made her mad. And so she had to get violent. That's her argument. That is literally what is in her statement. Trump is asked about this. Are you violating rule of law by arresting Monica and indicting her for assault?
Weaponizing with the arrest of a congresswoman, Democratic congresswoman.
Oh, give me a break. Did you see her? She was out of control.
Did you address
her? Those days are over. The days of woke. The days of woke. No, I didn't. The days of woke are over. That woman, I have no idea who she is. That woman was out of control. She was shoving federal agents. She was out of control. The days of that crap are over in this country. We're going to have law and order.
Okay. We haven't heard him say that before. This is a different Trump than last time.
Yeah.
And he's saying, go ahead, do it. I'll arrest you too. Meanwhile, it appears they found a brilliant new way around sanctuary cities, and this is super smart. What they're doing in LA.
Mm-hmm. I heard about this.
Oh my gosh, this is great. So normally sanctuary city, they refuse to turn over the illegal immigrant criminal, no matter how bad he is, child rapist, they don't care. He's a potential Democrat voter. And so they're going to let him go. So that forces ICE and you know, the ICE and Department of Homeland Security agencies, HSI, to have to stake them out. They waste hours doing it. Democrats know they're wasting hours in which they're not getting illegals. Democrats love that. Everybody's unsafe. So what they realized was they could go through the databases of who's in these jails, run them against the federal immigration databases, and see who is a repeat offender. In other words, once you come back over you've been deported, you come back over that border, that's a felony. That's reentry.
And I heard this described. The difference is that what there's a difference between an administrative warrant and a criminal warrant.
Yes.
And that's what they have when they run them against the database there, find there's violations, found there were repeat offenders, so automatically there is a criminal warrant which the states cannot legally oppose.
So what they do is they get a judge to charge them with felony reentry, and they're getting 40 to 50 day a day that way in L.A., and then ICE can just walk into the jail. They have to honor the warrant, and they walk the illegal back out.
And to oppose it or impede with it is a federal offense.
Right. And then there's nothing saying they have to, that the Trump administration has to try them. They can just deport them.
Yeah.
Just get them out of there and deport them. So it is a way to physically remove them from Democrat custody. It is ridiculous that we have to do this. But the good news is, after Bill Malusian broke the story on Fox News, within 24 hours, attorneys general all over the country are calling Trump going, hey, I got a sanctuary city in my jurisdiction. Can we do that there? So this is great. We got to get these criminals out of the country as fast as we can. Well, the same people in literal terror that Elon Musk might be the shadow president. Totally cool today. You'll see this, totally cool with Hunter Biden, who is on the Chinese payroll, that's indisputable, serving as Joe's virtual chief of staff. Here's Jake Tapper explaining that that's pretty much what he did.
How big a factor was the Hunter stuff?
I think it was considerable. I think Hunter was driving the decision-making for the family in a way that people, he was almost like a chief of staff of the family.
Does that strike you as pretty bizarre?
It's bizarre because I think he is provably, demonstrably unethical, sleazy, and prone to horrible decisions.
I mean, tell me how you really feel.
Well, I mean, I just look at the record. I mean, after his brother died, he cheated on his wife with his brother's widow and then got her addicted to crack. That's just one thing I could say. I mean, I don't have a lot of personal regard for him. And just based on having nothing to do with, I barely have ever met him. I've met him like once or twice. But I knew Bo. Bo was a great, upstanding guy.
I knew him too, really.
A real loss for the country too, not just for his family, for the country. But Hunter is not that. And the idea of letting him drive the family car, as it were, is just really, really questionable.
Hunter Biden was Joe's chief of staff. That who was operating the auto pen? This is why Congress needs to get to the bottom of who is operating the auto pen. If we're now finding out it wasn't Joe Biden, Joe Biden was, you know, off in gosh knows where. Hunter Biden was the president? Was he the president? I mean, nothing would surprise me at this point with the Democrats. Nothing. Would make sense, the guy that took $30 million from the Chinese Communist Party that was the subject of the investigation by the IRS for fraud, bribery, and money laundering. That was just one of the tranches of money, by the way, that Hunter took from the Chinese on behalf of the Biden family. We know that from the IRS whistleblowers. I bring that up every single day. You know what I don't understand? If all of that was under investigation for the by the IRS before, right? And the DOJ and the FBI silenced the two IRS agents who were put in charge of that. Again, they were investigating bribery. They were investigating tax evasion, they were investigating money laundering, and they were investigating foreign influence over the Biden family itself. And they flat out told Catherine Herridge, hey, Joe is the big guy. We knew that. He got 10%. This is just one $30 million deal that they were concentrating on, that the whole Biden family profited from, but not a damn one of them paid taxes. They were silenced by the Bill Barr DOJ. There's at least three felonies there in what I just listed. That doesn't even count the Bohai Harvest deals. It doesn't count any of the Chinese money, like the $11 million that was transferred in like $5 and $6 million tranches. If we could investigate this in 2019, when they already had control of the laptop, it turns out, where's the investigation now? Where is it? We want to resume it? want to go ahead and look into it. Was Hunter operating the White House on behalf of the Chinese, the Communist Chinese Party? I don't know. But when you have Jake Tapper just casually laying this out, suddenly this is all noble. Think about the all government effort, all hands on deck here. The censoring of the New York Post to keep us from finding out about Hunter Biden's laptop, Hunter Biden's criminality. A lot of these Chinese deals were documented on there. And he's the what?
How big a factor was the Hunter stuff?
I think it was considerable. I think Hunter was driving the decision making for the family in a way that people, he was almost like a chief of staff of the family.
Does that strike you as pretty bizarre?
It's bizarre because I think he is provably, demonstrably unethical, sleazy, and prone to horrible decisions. I mean,
tell me how you really feel.
All this was fine, though. It was all good. It was all okay. Okay. Coming up on the show, serious question, who killed Joe Biden? Not really. Who killed him? He, if what he's saying is true, and you never know with the Bidens, they lie so much. Assuming he actually does have cancer and it is at the level he's talking about. How did it get here? The kind of cancer he has is highly treatable. How we got here is inexplicable. And as you start to go down the rabbit hole, whether you're Donald Trump or CNN, you end up in the same bizarre place. And you can only conclude one thing. They're all still lying. Lying about Joe Biden. Up next. Who killed Joe Biden? Once you start asking these set of questions, you'll see why I opened the segment that way. Who killed Joe Biden? It's a legitimate question. Even his aides are asking it. Even Donald Trump is asking it. Even CNN is asking it. Wait. Yesterday afternoon, a Biden family spokesperson announces, oh, he hasn't had a PSA test since 2014. Guys in the audience know what that is. To check, basically, your prostate. Lee says he has one every 6 months. My husband has one every year. Pretty standard for guys. Joe didn't get one, though. Not since 2014? Weird. And almost immediately, the media began playing a game. It's like they don't know whether to lie, to cover up, to question. They don't know what to do anymore. There's three health agencies, basically, three health groups in the United States of America that make recommendations about whether you should get a PSA test and what at what age. Okay, two of them, yes, call for testing starting at somewhere between age 50, 55, and they say cut it off at 69 or 70 because it's such a slow-growing cancer that, you know, you don't really need to test after 70 anymore. You're going to die of natural causes anyway, is the theory. The other one, so that's the American Urological Association, the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. Okay, the other one, the American Cancer Society, says start testing at 50, and puts no upper limit on it. You should just keep testing as long as you're alive. No telling how long you could live. You think he didn't get the American Cancer Society standard? He's the vice president and the president. But they stopped testing, they say, the Biden family claims, their spokesperson claims. They stopped testing in 2014? Okay, doesn't make a lot of sense, but we'll go with it for a moment. You know what else you have to believe? And I had a doctor friend of mine text me this the other day, yesterday, actually. You know what else you have to believe? He didn't have a blood test either. I'm not talking about a PSA test. I'm talking about a blood test. Do you believe that? You can't be this sick with this level of cancer, and it didn't show up a year ago in a blood test. And I'm not talking about it would have shown up as prostate cancer. I'm just talking about it would have shown up as something's wrong, follow-up test time. Just the simple blood test that we all got. I just had one, a month ago. The kind we all have when we go to the doctor. Did basic medicine. There's no way those tests didn't show something was wrong. We don't know what, but would have necessitated further tests. I mean, look, they test your white blood cells. Come on. Folks, they're lying to us again. I don't know what the reason is, but they're lying to us again. Oh, yeah, Joe's just, you know, having trouble urinating. Just discovered he's dying of prostate cancer. There's no way. No, there's no way. And even Biden aides are going to the New York Post and saying they fear the worst. And somebody killed Joe. I mean, maybe not deliberately, but effectively. Headline, ex-Biden aides now talking, raise new questions about Biden's cancer diagnosis in the pages of the New York Post. These are legitimate questions. According to what we've been told, Biden was ultimately diagnosed on Friday. Within the same 24-hour period, the HER tapes came out. We hear him confessing to crimes that are felonies that carry a lot of years in prison. By the way, the same felonies that his DOJ charged Trump with, 35 of those, totaling 335 years for classified documents abuse, says. It's probably just coincidence that that's when the announcement was made. Anyway, aides of Biden's were working with Biden, now talking to the New York Post. The aides, according to the New York Post, are concerned that fear of public reaction or an effect on the election might have delayed the diagnosis. Quote, I do believe they felt like something was going on and were worried about it and kind of hedged around it for a bit, said one White House staffer. I just don't know how they just kind of find this out on a Friday and it's this far advanced and serious. That's what everybody's wondering. If it's in the bones, there's got to be discomfort. I think they just didn't test. That doesn't make any sense, but here's what they say. These are Biden aides being quoted in the New York Post. A blood test has a paper trail. They probably just didn't do the test. I think it would leak if he had a PSA test they tried to bury. What's ironic, the person said, is that if they didn't give the president a PSA test because of the potential for optics of a possible false positive, whatever, that decision's ultimately going to lead to his death because they could have caught it early. Okay, how do you know not to test, though? How do you know, oh, we better not test, it might leak that he has cancer? Then you know he has cancer. Why didn't he get treated? And I don't buy this, well, he's demented, the family should have taken care. Joe Biden had more moments of clarity than he did of dementia. He was perfectly capable of noticing he would have been in some kind of pain, some kind of discomfort that this was going on and making a phone call to a doctor, you know, maybe one outside the White House. I don't know. None of this makes sense. This is a highly treatable, slow developing cancer. And I'm not going to play the audio again because I played it earlier in the show of Joe Biden in 2022 saying he had cancer. He claimed it was caused by oil falling from the sky. And I played it at the time. He said it. Joe lies about everything and he's so crazy. Who knows? We all just dismissed it. Folks, who killed Joe Biden? Now, there's a bunch of conspiracies on the internet with people saying, oh, they wanted him dead. They wanted, you know, Kamala to take over, get good into her presidency, establish herself. No, that didn't happen. There's no way Jill and Hunter are going to let their meal deal go. There's no way. Family would have never allowed it. If only for selfish reasons. They're not good people. But if Joe's dead, the party's over. As we're seeing now. So that's not it. What went on here? What went on here? Vance Jones got one thing right about it, though, on CNN.
There are people who knew and said nothing. And that is a crime against this republic. And I think the Democrats are going to pay for a long time for being a part of what is now being revealed to be a massive cover-up.
You know what kills me, though? It's just how is the shock of it. I mean, like how it's even shocking. Folks, he wasn't even in office yet. And we were reporting they were using the basement strategy to avoid the obvious dementia being seen by the public. Listen to Whoopi Goldberg.
But I want somebody to tell me, well, when did you know it was bad? If you knew, why did you wait?
Yeah. So can I get in for a second? He said that it was after he moderated the debate.
I want to know who the heck knew. You knew. You guys all knew. There's no way they didn't know. Folks, I keep coming back to conversation with my brother. He's a liberal, very well informed, takes in their media, nobody else's. Comes to my house after the debate. I'm sitting there, kids are sitting there, husband's sitting there. We have a house rule. We don't bring up politics unless he does. And he brings up, he says, did you see that debate? He's genuinely shocked at how far gone Biden is. He says, did you see it? I say to him, well, I mean, for Biden, that was not really a bad brain day. That was probably like a 6 out of 10, but he has many 8, 9s, and 10s. And I was like, I've got a whole audio vault of it. You know, I'm like, no, that I wasn't too shocked by it. And he was shocked. I wasn't shocked. My point here is this. Okay, to us, this looks bizarre. And why are you talking about this? To them, this is fresh. This is shocking. This is new. They were supposed to be cheap fakes. This is actually a crisis. I'm telling you, their sheeple believed it. And I can just remember the looks on my kids' faces. They're like, you know, looking at each other like, wow, you really didn't know he had dementia? Because they know. They see the TikTok videos. They see the Twitter videos. It's a meme. The kids have seen it as a meme. Like, how could you not know? But I'm telling you, on their side, you take in their media, you did not know. This is a crisis of confidence for them. Truly. Because they've still been operating up till now in the world of 10 years ago, where they are the only media voice. They can run whatever hoax they want. It'll work. They can tell whatever lie they want. Most American people, majorities will spit back at them in polls whatever lie they're telling. They can't do it anymore. They still live in 10 years ago. They thought they could just come out low-key, be like, yeah, I guess we got the Biden thing wrong. But they cannot control the reaction. Their people are finding out for the first time they lie in a large-scale, systematic way, and this is a crisis. They cannot define themselves anymore. They can't define us anymore. They've never had to have a real debate with real facts on the battleground of ideas. And they don't know how to do it because they've never had to. Okay, well, Donald Trump smackdown. Yeah, with the head of South Africa. Folks, this is incredible. The argument of the Democrats, because these refugees are white, they shouldn't be able to come to America. Take a listen.
Meantime, South Africa's president headed to the White House today for a meeting with President Trump. Tensions high after the White House slammed the country's, quote, government-sponsored racial discrimination.
Brooke Singman is live in Washington with more. Hey, Brooke. Hey, guys. Good morning. President Trump is expected to question the South African president over alleged genocidal rhetoric against white South African farmers known as Afrikaners. So back in February, President Trump signed an executive order that cut all U.S. assistance to South Africa over the alleged discrimination. But the South African government continues to deny the accusations. Nearly 60 Afrikaners arrived in the U.S. on a charter plane earlier this month after being offered refugee status. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Marco Rubio is expected back on Capitol Hill today after clashing with Senate Democrats over allowing those Afrikaners into the U.S. Listen.
Wow. We have a different standard based upon the color of somebody's skin. Would that be acceptable?
Well, I'm not the one arguing that. Apparently you are, because you don't like the fact that they're white, and that's why they're coming.
I'm just asking you to say that that would be unacceptable.
Well, no, I would say that the United States...
a very easy thing to say.
The United States has a right to pick and choose who they allow into the United States.
Even based on the color of somebody's skin.
No, you're the one that's talking about the color of their skin, not me. These
you're
are people
refusing
whose farms
to acknowledge-
were being burned.
So let's get this right. There's 49 of these families, okay? In a single year, Joe Biden flew 326,000 migrants from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela into Florida as part of the voter drive. Why would you dump them in Florida? Well, they're trying to move it to purple and blue. So you do the amnesty, and then it's blue, and we don't ever win another presidential election again. Because this is a voter drive. It's what it is. Including, listen to this, 100,000 Venezuelans in Miami alone. These numbers are staggering. This is just 1 year, folks. 1 year of the Biden administration, 326,000. Okay. Well, it's sad that people live in Cuba, Haiti. Nicaragua's a mess. Haiti has collapsed and is a mess. And Venezuela is a mess. They don't have genocides going on in those countries like they do in South Africa. Over 4,000 farmers have been hacked to death, mostly with axes. And their children. And their wives. And taking the land by violence is state policy, violence and race. There's only 49 of these fams. That's it. 49 of these fams. It's not enough to swing Miami red if we dump them all in one place like Joe Biden. Why are they freaking out? It doesn't have anything to do with race, folks. It doesn't. It's because it is believed this is a trial balloon and Trump will bring in more people who will vote Republican. Many are Christian. They're devout. They're gainfully employed. That's exactly who votes Republican. So the position of the Democrats is people who actually deserve to have refugee status because they well could be killed, leave them if they're white. If they're not really at risk of death, but their country's in a bad place and they're not white, bring them. You know what that tells you? This is just a game. It's all about votes.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.